and paper. Professional writing is more than just typing. Indeed, professional writing is a unique skill, the way every profession is unique. Professional writing, applied to your resume, can give you the edge in landing the interview, which could lead to the job you want. A resume, which has numerous uses, usually takes about 2 hours to write. No more struggling over how to sell yourself on paper. In 2 hours or less, University Resume can have you armed with a custom resume and seeking the job you need for the career you want. For any kind of career writing, from resumes to loan applications, federal form SF-171 federal and state applications, call University Resume Service Alaska at 479-5747. For all types of professional writing, we're in the Yellow Pages under resumes.
Hi, everybody. Johnny Holiday reporting on sports. For the time being, Eddie Sutton is still head basketball coach at the University of Kentucky.
I've been told that I am the basketball coach at the University of Kentucky. That's what my contract reads. Until I'm told differently, that's what I'm going to continue to do with all the enthusiasm and effort that I can.
Sutton was informed of that decision by interim AD Joe Birch today. He'll remain coach through the end of the season. He still has a year to go on his contract at Kentucky. There have been earlier published reports in the Columbus Dispatch that said Sutton was on his way out. Lee Rose, an assistant with the New Jersey Nets, would take over the program in some 10 to 14 days. Last night, the Wildcats snapped a six-game losing streak, longest in 64 years, with a win over Tennessee. The nation's longest Division I winning streak belongs to West Virginia. The Mountaineers have won 21 in a row. Tonight, Gail Catlett's club takes on St. Joe's in Morgantown. Of concern to Catlett, keeping his team from looking ahead. The Mountaineers meet Temple in Philly Sunday night.
I've been coaching long enough to know that if you don't try to win the next game you play, then it really screws your season up, and I'm not going to let us do that.
Second-ranked Arizona beats Arizona State in a big Pac-10 showdown tonight. The Wildcats are 20-3. They won 14 of 15 conference games. The Calgary Flames and Washington Capitals will take part in an exhibition tour of the Soviet Union come September. The two clubs will play four games each in Moscow and Leningrad. Capitals right wing Mike Gartner looks forward to that trip abroad.
I've been over to Moscow before when I was 15 years old representing Team Canada over there in a tournament. It's changed, I'm sure, in the last 15 years or so, but we're looking forward to it. There's nothing we can do about it, so we better just enjoy it. That's where we're going for training camp, so we have to like it, so I'm going to like it.
It'll be the longest road trip in NHL history. No NHL team has ever played in the Soviet Union. Soviet Union teams have played in the United States and Canada. An all-star team did make the trek over there back in 1972. The trading deadline of the NBA is set for tonight, 6 o'clock Pacific time, 9 o'clock Eastern. Still no sign of Adrian Dantley in Dallas. The Mavericks will suspend the veteran if they can't unload him by that deadline. Dallas is looking for a first-round draft pick for Dantley. In Sacramento and Boston this afternoon, talk of a deal involving the Celtics and Kings. The Celts would send Danny Ainge and Brad Lojas to the Sacramento Ball Club in exchange for Joe Klein and Ed Pinckney. For the ABC Information Network, I'm Johnny Holiday.
Time now is 8 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock, and it's going to be Alaskan Gold Trails this afternoon. I'm Lori Backus, filling in for Lowell Purcell, who was filling in for Jim Adana, who's off on vacation. We're going to get this straight this afternoon, though, but first let's hear a little bit about the weather. Today, the clouds will be thickening with highs near 10 above. Tonight, it's going to be cloudy again with a chance of snow by morning. The temperature will be steady or slowly rising. Who knows? Let's wish for slowly rising. Friday, you can expect some snow with a high near 25 to 30 degrees. The Fairbanks temperature records for today, Thursday. The record high was 48 degrees set in 1945, and the record low of just 50 below was set in 1932. The normal high being 11 degrees and the normal low being 13 below. The average temperature then turns out to be 1 below. The sunrise, if you missed it this morning, came up at 8:23 a.m. and it's going to set at 5:48 p.m. Let's all gather around and watch it. 9 hours and 25 minutes of possible sunshine today with a gain from yesterday of just 6 minutes. Time now for Alaskan Gold Trails.
Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to Alaska Gold Trails. I'm your host, Jim Madonna. This is your radio show on mining in Alaska. And before we launch right into the thick of the program, I want to tell you a little bit about the precious metals people. Who's the precious metals people, folks? You know, it's Oxford Assaying and Refining, located at 208 Wendell Street, right here in Fairbanks, Alaska. That's where the miners sell their gold. But that's not all they do, folks. They also have investment gold and silver in the form of silver ingots, coins, and bars, and then in the form of gold ingots, bars, and of course those coins that we are so familiar with. For example, the American Gold Eagles, which are now available in four sizes. That's Oxford Assaying and Refining, located at 208 Wendell Street. Their phone number is 456-3967. Or if you want the gold, silver, and platinum prices of the day, the number of their quote line is 452-7858. And if you want a little personal attention, the number once again is 456-3967. That's Oxford Assaying and Refining at 208 Wendell Street.
Well, thank you very much, Jim Madonna. You're off on vacation, but your voice is here with us, and I'm sure he's also here with us in spirit. Once again, I'm Lori Backus, and I'm sitting in for Jim Madonna and Lowell Purcell by way of the grapevine, I guess you might call it. First of all, let me announce the DOT wants you to know that the Steese Highway is now open, so you can drive on it all your little heart desires. We have in the studio today Mr. Del Ackles and also Rudy Vetter, and I believe this is a continuance of the program from last week, gentlemen.
Yes, thank you, Laurie. Nice to be here again. Yes, we are kind of continuing the discussions here. We didn't really cover exactly what the mining extension really meant, and there's been a lot of questions and inquiries on knowing a little more about it. So we'll come back here.
That sounds good. I really needed to learn a lot about what goes on in the mining community. I hear a lot about it. I read about it in the newspaper, but there's so much that I don't understand. And why don't you begin by telling us a little bit about the mining extension then?
Well, the mining extension, actually, the concept of mining extension at the university was a non-degreed type of a course that could be offered to the public that would answer a lot of questions and also give a hands-on demonstration on how to do certain things, all the way from recreational mining. Laurie, it wouldn't make any difference if it was how to operate a suction dredge or even how to pan, but it also gets into me more involved on the larger scale as far as the family-operated mines and stuff. It becomes evident after a while that there's a lot of things you have to learn on assessing values of the ground, such as drilling programs, the different type of drilling programs that could be used, the churn drill, reverse circulation drilling. And the geology, it becomes very involved from that point on, but that's one thing about this mining extension course. It does have a lot of latitude in teaching everything from the basic skills of panning, recreational mining, all the way through large-scale mining.
Mm-hmm. So someone like myself, who knows little to less about mining, could probably go through one of the courses. Now, are these courses that are ongoing all the time, or is it just certain times of the year? Do you have courses in the winter?
Well, there's courses that are continuing almost on a full-time basis up there. Some of them are up to 2 weeks long. Some of them are only a few hours long.
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends on what variety of course and what level of education you're looking at in that particular type of endeavor. So, yeah, that is continuous year-round.
Now, Mr. Ackles and Mr. Vetter, both of you are longtime miners and longtime residents of Alaska also. Mr. Vetter, why don't you step up to the microphone here. Why don't you tell me, how did you get started in mining? Did you go through a course such as what the University Extension offers?
Well, originally, I was interested in mining and geology in Washington State prior to coming to Alaska in 1951, and then I took several courses out there, which were very good, enabled me to learn a lot about the past mining in Alaska, about the mineralogy, the geology, and as Del said, from the very simple forms of prospecting to the most sophisticated planning, up to the geophysical and geochemical methods, how to analyze and determine rocks, mineral and rock identification, taught the use of maps, mapping, drilling, certain types of drilling. I was familiar with that, but they also added to, and as the state of the art has changed, mining extension has moved right along with it. Jim Madonna has taught a very good course out there in mineral identification and mining, milling, practically every facet of mining operations. Jim is a very good instructor. He's a little tough on his students. He expects them to attend and be attentive, and if they are out there to learn, willing to learn, there's a great deal that he can teach them.
Laura, I think the best way, in your case, where you don't have that much knowledge in the industry, it would be a very good example if you decide to go out, let's say, on a weekend or something and build something, a little sluice box or something, that would give you the opportunity to have a little fun and recreate at the same time and do a little mining. If you did do that, of course, right off the bat, if you didn't have the knowledge on how to build the box or the apparatuses they would need, then that's where this course would come in handy. And they do have little short courses that just gives you the construction methods.
So let's say, for example, that I do have my little sluice box all ready and it's nice and painted pretty. And we're ready to go out, and we're going to find some gold. Now, I've heard that the land around here is fairly gold-rich. Can I just pull off on the side of the highway, tramp through the woods, and find a little stream and set up shop right there and start sluicing some gold?
Well, in some cases, you can do that, but it's best to kind of check first. There's several agencies here that can help you, not only in the Bureau of Land Management, but Department of Natural Resources over here next to you. To the airport will give you ideas of the best targets, best places to go to. One thing you don't want to do, though, is to get into an active mining area or an active mine and without prior permission.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as panning and stuff, there even on the active mines around here, the general rule is basically if you do check in just for some recreational panning or something, most of these miners are very well would welcome somebody to come in and do this, even on a recreational basis, and sometimes they even encourage the tourists to do so. So the main thing is to check first to see, basically you're not going to get yourself in trouble of not checking in first. But there is ground here that the state does maintain that is open for panning and recreational mining too. And there's areas within BLM lands in the Steese White Mountains which they do recognize that this is a valid use, and they also encourage us. So there's a lot of areas you can check into. Just check with the departments first to see which areas are best.
All right, thank you. Let's take a moment and thank some of our sponsors for this Alaskan Gold Trails program. And if you'd like to give us a call, 479-8255 is the number to call if you'd like to join us. Once again, this is Alaskan Gold Trails.
I always am amazed at the back of the local telephone directory here in Fairbanks, Alaska, where you see the fine advertisement presented by B&L Pawn Shop. B&L Pawn is located at the corner of Gaffney and Cushman, and some people say it's the most unpredictable variety store in Fairbanks. And as far as I'm concerned, that's an understatement. It's more like having a giant garage sale in one room for a fascinating variety of items. Stop over at B&L. You're going to find that they have jewelries, clocks, stereos, headphones, guns, scopes, and winches, and many, many other items over there. In fact, you can get anything at B&L Pawn. B&L traditionally has offered tremendous savings, but in addition, if you tell Killer you heard it on KFAR, she'll even sweeten the deal. And if you tell her you heard about B&L Pawn on Alaska Gold Trails from Jim Madonna, she'll even sweeten it more. That's B&L Pawn, located at the corner of Gaffney and Cushman. Their phone number is 452-6491. Keep that one in mind, folks. 452-6491. Folks, do you know where your interior truck headquarters is located? That might just be a good question to have an answer to in case somebody held a contest on Alaska Gold Trails. Well, the answer is who they are, where they are, and what they do. And that is, who are they? Tip Top Chevrolet. Where are they? 1916 Cushman Street, right here in Fairbanks, Alaska. Their phone number, and keep this one solidly in mind, is 452-8211. That's Tip Top Chevrolet. And you can also get your quality GM service parts right there at Tip Top. Tip Top Chevrolet is your one-stop center for new Chevrolets, used cars, parts, and authorized service. Tip Top Chevrolet, once again, located at 1916 Cushman Street. Their phone number, 452-8211. And tell Robbie you heard about his support for the mining community right here on Alaska Gold Trails with Jim Madonna. Folks, I'd like to take a minute to tell you about Days Inn, located at 321 East 5th Avenue. That's 5th and Cordova Street in Anchorage, Alaska. They feature 116 rooms, some non-smoking rooms, free parking, an airport limousine, airport courtesy telephone, and rental cars are available through the Days Inn. They also feature a 24-hour restaurant with room service, wake-up and message service, and in-house movies. They also, of course, have the lounge. Convenient to all downtown businesses and facilities. For reservations and information, feel free to call their 800 number. That's 1-800-325-2000. 2525.
Welcome back to the program. Once again, this is Alaskan Gold Trails, and if you'd like to join us, as we have a caller on hold already, call 479-8255. That's 479-TALK. Makes it a little easier to remember. My guests here today, Del Ackles and Rudy Vetter. And let's get set. Are you gentlemen ready for a phone call?
Yeah, we sure are.
All right, we'll go right to this line. Hi, you're on Alaskan Gold Trails.
Well, hello. Just a few days ago, I was starting to get into a debate with somebody, and then I had to kind of back off and admit that maybe he had a point, because I really didn't know what I was talking about. And that was, as I was thinking that the state or the environmentalists were being unreasonably strict about turbidity requirements in streams where they do mining. And he was saying, well, he appreciates when he canoes that the water is nice and clear. And I had decided, I really don't know. Are they unreasonably strict, or what do you think about it?
Well, I could answer that for you. We kind of want to stick with the mining extension here and not get off into, the controversial type of questions at this time, but I will answer that. As far as the placer mining's discharge, you've got to understand that the waters in Alaska have several use classifications on it. Recreational has a certain use classification, industrial has a certain use classification, so does fisheries habitat protection, and drinking water sources. Each one of these has a different level of protection. Unfortunately, the placer mining industry was never attached to any of these particular type of classifications, and what happened in the end result that basically they got stuck with a drinking water classification, and I do feel it is beyond reason, and it is strict, and there's been a lot of testing programs. There's been a lot of money thrown into the testing of different types of methods to see if this industry could comply with drinking water, and it's been very difficult and extremely expensive, and they really don't have the answer yet. So to answer your question, I would say yes. 5NTU is an extremely strict standard, not alone for MUS to abide by to provide water to the community here as far as your domestic drinking water, but in the same token, this same type of water also has to be discharged by a commercial mining operation, and the difficulties in that are really confounding, not only to the industry but to the agencies too. Eventually we're going to have to get this resolved. Eventually we're going to have to come to some type of standard that does not endanger the environment, that does not leave disagreeable aesthetic effects to the canoeist or anybody else, and still protects the fish habitat. And I do believe the 5NTU is too strict, and I think they're going to have to come to a little better compromise than what they have now.
Okay, where could I get more information about this?
DOT, or not DOT, but DNR, is probably your best source. At the DNR office out here, we also have representatives from EPA that are also in that same office. And they can give you all the information you need to know. There is ongoing studies right now to come up with different type of threshold limits. One thing that for the listeners out there that don't understand what we talk about when we talk about turbidity, or what they call the NTU rating, it's a measurement that is basically taken in a sample of water that measures reflected light. And this reflected light is generally off of particles that are suspended in the water. And 5NTU is basically crystal clear water. Most of the water downtown that reaches your taps will run between 1 and 3 NTU, and sometimes it might run much higher than 5NTU on the norm. So I would say that this type of measurement is probably the wrong type of measurement. It really doesn't give a true picture of actually what's in the water. One large piece floating in the water could give you 100 NTU, where maybe 100 little tiny pieces could only give you 5 NTU. So we should probably maybe be looking at a TSS limitation that would be satisfiable, as far as the habitat. But they can answer your questions, and the people from EPA out there would be very happy to explain more to it. If you're interested, give them a call.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for your phone call. Once again, this is Alaskan Gold Trails. If you'd like to join us, the number is 479-8255. My guests are Del Ackles and Rudy Vetter, and both of you are right now currently active in mining?
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are. I've been mining up here for about 25 years off and on now, Lori, and it's been our sole income for the last 16 or 17 years, so it's been a learning process for me. I started out with really with very little knowledge in what we were doing in this industry. So it's because of Mining Extension and other programs that the university affords, and talking to some of the old timers, that it's been a learning process, and we've been fairly active in, since then, and developing fairly innovative technology in this industry with jig circuits and various other type of recovery devices that gave us two benefits. Number one, it gave us better recoveries, and number two, it improved the water quality. So these are things that you have to seriously look at now when you do go out, because the environmental concerns that are out there are getting to be more and more expensive, and if you don't take that in consideration, you get yourself into trouble.
Now, Rudy, let me ask you, you've been involved in mining since, did you say 1951?
Yes.
All right. What are some of the changes that you have seen in mining as far as the recovery process, and is it a more lucrative business for the time that you put into it now as opposed to in 1951?
I would say that if one is adequately financed, why, it's more lucrative right now than it has ever been. Primarily, though, I am engaged in hard rock mining, and that is a slightly different type of mining than what Dell is talking about, primarily placer mining. The placer mining is the recovery of metals, minerals taken from the stream bed that have been naturally broken down from the rock by chemical methods of water, erosion, frost, etc. The source rock usually is referred to as the hard rock mining series. New advancements in mining and mineralogy, exploration and extraction and processing have made it very lucrative. The state of Nevada is practically overwhelmed with mining at the present time, primarily because they have large disseminated prospects there that make it possible to extract gold for as little as $94 an ounce, and they've been selling it recently for up to $400 an ounce. So you can see that that'd be a very profitable operation.
Well, another thing that makes it lucrative also, they should point out, since 1972, the price of gold has gone from $32 or $34 an ounce up to several hundred.
I sold thousands of ounces of gold at $35.
Oh, no. Wish you had it back.
Yeah,
right?
And it has been as high as nearly 800 since then.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Well, let me ask you, the University Mining Extension is very helpful then for people who are interested in getting into mining and learning about it, whether they decide to actively mine or not. Why don't you tell me then, how can the University Extension help people who are already established in mining? Are there programs for that?
Well, I think any miner, no matter if he's a small pauper or a large company, has something to learn out there, because it's an ongoing learning process. Alaska right now is leading the world in placer technology and placer recovery systems. We've done this basically because of the changes, the dramatic changes that's happened here in the last 10 years involving environmental constraints. Mm-hmm. There had to be some very, very expensive and some very innovative techniques that had to be developed into this industry. We don't have the type of mining we had, let's say, 20 or 30 years ago. It's getting to be non-existent at this point. But yes, it does. It affords a lot of opportunities for somebody, not alone that cannot afford, let's say, to have his ground drilled to find out what additional reserves may be. It may give him the opportunity to go ahead and take a class and learn how to do it himself. And in this particular case, it may save him a lot of money. Another thing that Mining Extension does for the active mom-pop type of miner that's out there that is trying to conduct this as a business, that does not have the geology background that they may need, it does give them a source of information for the fact that this particular Mining Extension course does send people out into the field that not alone will help in the field to help the mines or the miners in the field to make modifications to their systems to improve the recoveries, or to even look at the ground that they have to ascertain if there's other minerals other than gold and silver there that they might be overlooking. And this happens quite often because placer leads to some of your more significant hard rock discoveries.
So the Mining Extension is not the gold mining extension. We're talking about other minerals as well. Could you tell us, what are some of the minerals that we can also find around the area?
We have lead, silver, zinc. There are places, although they're not really developed, that I've discovered, other people have discovered, copper. One of the things that Dell has brought out here is that it teaches a person to perhaps go and learn. The Mining Extension courses are very good in the fact that it teaches self initiation, shows you how to go out and learn, which is an ongoing situation, as we have said. And I find that there's probably nowhere else in the world that you could get a course as, that would be as good as is presented out here if you follow the information that they give you and if you really attempt to learn and are interested in mining and exploration.
There's other types of things that they teach there also that gives you different types of instrumentation that may be used by yourself that the university will afford to loan to you, to certain types of equipment like magnetometers that would give you a magnetic survey. Mm-hmm. You'll find that a lot of times the black sands that's associated with gold is another mineral, and it can be detected by certain types of instrumentation. This can also give you a good indication of possibly where a buried pay streak may be, mm-hmm. which from pitting or drilling later on, we'll find out if you were correct or not. And there's other types of instrumentations that that they afford in classes up there that shows you how to use electromagnetic type of equipment, resistive type, which are using the Earth's own gravitational force to give you the indication where these mineralized or sulfided areas are. So it can be very complex too. And the main thing is we get a lot of people out there don't even know how to pan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know, Laura. If
I can relate to that.
If you haven't had a pan,
I can scrub a pan, but I can't pan for gold.
Well, if you get a pan, don't paint it yellow. That's the first thing. But but it does give you a very wide range of versatility in what they do teach, and from the basic panning to the more sophisticated electronic equipment that is used nowadays to basic recovery systems like you would have in a pan, all the way to very, very sophisticated recovery systems using jigs or spirals or flotation or various other things that would be mystifying to you to sit here and talk about them without knowing about it.
Well, we're going to see if we can uncover some of that mystery. Let's take a moment and thank some more of our sponsors, and then we're going to find out from these gentlemen, where's the gold?
I'd like to take a minute out, folks, and talk a little bit about our friends out there at North Pole. That's Hector's Welding, located at 13 Mile Richardson Highway. He's been in business serving Alaska for many, many years. They've got 14,400 square feet of shop space, which is capable of handling the most demanding work quickly and efficiently. We know Hector's Welding as the place where they manufacture the most efficient multi-channel sluice boxes in the state of Alaska. In addition to building sluice boxes, they can replace dozer blade liners. They also rebuild loader buckets and ripper shanks. They do heavy equipment repairs and modifications. And of course, as we pointed out earlier, mining equipment fabrication is their specialty, including sluice boxes, conveyors, feeders, grizzlies, and screening plants. They also fabricate specialized ripples and punch plates. That's Hector's Welding, located at 13 Mile Richardson Highway. Phone 488-6432. And when you go out there, tell them you heard about their ad on Alaska Gold Trails from Jim Madonna.
Keepsakes and snapshots, old clocks and dogs, hanging up pictures, stacking up logs. Everyday people are making new friends, and it's starting to feel like home. Getting settled in, life's looking better than it's ever been before. Our new home and dreams, it's what we've been waiting for.
HUD Homes, for a place to call your own.
Floorcraft is having a gigantic carpet and vinyl remnant sale. You'll find savings up to 50% on beautiful vinyl remnants this Friday and Saturday only. Also watch for large roll specials on carpet remnants. Check tonight's paper for a complete listing of sale items. And don't miss the incredible carpet and vinyl savings this Friday and Saturday only at Floorcraft, corner of Aurora Drive and Phillips Field Road. Open 9 to 6 Friday, 9 to 5 on Saturday. Visa, MasterCard, and Floorcraft Charge welcome.
Welcome back to the program. 479-8255 is the number to call if you'd like to join us. I'm Lori Backus, sitting in for Jim Madonna, alias Lowell Purcell, alias... Well, once again, we have Dan Ackles here and Rudy Vetter. Both of them are active miners, longtime Alaskans, very active in finding the gold. And we're going to put the question to them right now. Gentlemen... Now, over the years, people have found gold through various different means, and I'm sure that back in the ages when we didn't have all this modern technology, let's say, I don't even know what modern technology you have now, but is it possible that the poor sourdough that was out there fighting the cold and dragging that poor mule with everything loaded on its back, and he was struggling to survive, and he missed his goal by inches. Is that something that you think was a common occurrence, or how did they find out where the gold was at?
Boy, they did it by a bunch of hard work. Basically, from sampling, pan sampling, stream sampling, this is what gave them their indications. And there was a lot of holes that were poked in the ground up here, and that was the basis of most of their research. But at that time, if you put 10 or 15,000 people out in the hills just wandering around with that sole aspect of discovery, they didn't miss too much, Laurie. There was some of the major hard rock discoveries and stuff that they just didn't have the means of discovering. But the placer, they were fairly thorough. And there's one thing you got to understand, the placer only occurs generally, or the gold occurrence is generally in certain types of terrain. So these types of terrains were looked at, and they did have the ability to recognize it. For the layman like yourself, if you wanted to go out and discover something, I think your best source of information would be reading history books, seeing which areas were mineralized, and go back and concentrate on those areas.
Tramping the hills and scooping dirt isn't really a good idea, is it?
Well, you can probably tramp through all the hills you want and scoop all the dirt you want, but having a direction of where you're going and to give yourself a little more excitement on success, I think your history would be a very, very good teacher.
Well, Rudy, why don't you tell us about your very first success story? When did you jump up and down, I found gold, I made my strike?
Well, I guess the first really successful operation that we had was the one that's known as the Christina Group of Claims north of Fairbanks here. We made that discovery in 1957 after about 3 years of prospecting. We'd always made up our mind we weren't going to stake or make any investments, acquire any ground until we found something we thought was good. And we did this with the aid of the geochemical method of prospecting, which was developed at the university and mining extension. And there's been a considerable sum of money spent there, and we've taken out a considerable amount of gold in the past ourselves. Our last production was in about 1967. To get back to what the old-timer did, there is a saying that you must have a nose for ore, and that's what Dell was referring to when he said they knew pretty well what they were looking for. They knew the terrain. They perhaps knew the surface structure and the geology. Certain types of terrain tend to be productive, and others are not. There are other sources that we can use now. We can go back and find a lot of that old information in U.S. Geological Survey bulletins. The university library has a large file on that.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be surprised at how well they covered this ground. There were several factors that made it necessary. In those days, there was no Social Security, government handouts, or anything like that. They had to make their own beans and potatoes, and it is an incentive, and I think that is something perhaps that a lot of we so-called modern or people at this time are missing. I hope it doesn't get as bad as it could possibly get under the circumstances, but that might be a good lesson for some of us to have to go back and really earn our beans.
If we knew that there was no safety net to catch us if we fell, perhaps we'd be more inclined to climb harder.
Climb harder, get more experience, and be more valuable as citizens and producers.
Thank you. Let's take a moment, and we'll hear from another one of our listeners calling in on our line 479-8255. We're going to go to this line. Hi, you're on Alaskan Gold Trails.
Yes, ma'am. I'm an old gold miner's wife. And I was just listening. Was that Hector there?
Yes, let me see. Can I get you to speak up just a little bit?
Was that Hector that was just talking?
No, that's Rudy Vetter.
You ask Rudy? He knows me, but I'd rather not talk. Would you ask Rudy to do a favor for an old gold miner's wife?
I think I know who it is. Go ahead.
Would he explain to most people while you're gold mining, what antimony is?
What?
Antimony.
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 And why people stockpile that, and what antimony is used for. And I want to turn my radio back up and ask Hector that I will call him when he gets home tonight, and I'd like to speak with him. But I'd like for him to tell the public that don't know gold mining, when you run into gold, what antimony is.
All right.
Most people don't know what that is used for, and they don't understand it. I'm enjoying his talk because he's a very brilliant man. So I will talk to Hector at his home tonight. I'll call him. But I would like for him to inform the public that antimony is not what most people think it is.
Okay. All right, let's
and
give
thank
him
you. I'll call Hector at home tonight.
Okay,
bye-bye.
You.
Yeah, Rudy, she's asking for antimony, not animony. Or maybe you got something here I don't know about.
Antimony.
Go ahead.
Antimony. Well, antimony, I am told, and I'm not sure that this is true, but they say that antimony, when it was first found, if it is taken internally, it's rather poisonous, and they say that that's where it got its name. There were groups of monks in Europe, and I don't know the exact locality, and it was called anti-monk originally. Some people found a devious way of getting back to the monks who were parasitic upon the society.
Well, now, explain what antimony is and what does it look like.
Antimony is a sulfide mineral, and it is comes in the same classification as lead and some of the other minerals of that classification. It's a rather dark gray looking mineral. It can occur as a very long needle-like crystal, or it can be very, very dense, and the crystals can be fine like sugar or salt. It's used primarily in batteries. Antimony is also used in cosmetics. Some of the eye shading is antimony. It is used in hardening a lot of lead type minerals that are used in industry.
Now, why would this be something that's of particular interest to an old gold miner's wife?
Well, she probably has talked a lot about it or knows where there is some. Another one of the very modern uses for antimony is that when it is burned, in case you have a fire, it gives off a gas that is heavier than oxygen. So that gas settles, and it will actually put out a fire. It's used in drapes, automobile upholstery, a number of fire retardants.
Well, antimony is also a strategic mineral here for the United States, and it's a very important mineral. Most of the antimony mines that were developed here during the 1940s, when all the other mining was shut down, as far as the placer mining, the gold mining was shut down during the war, but strategic mineral mining did continue, and this was one of the minerals that they did need for the war effort. Some of the bigger deposits that were opened up in this area, one was out by Lavengood, which is still a producer of antimony today, and of course on the Stampede Trail going into, which is now part of the park, the Stampede Mine, Earl Pilgrim mined antimony there. And there was another on the Rex Road that goes in there, there was another antimony mine that was also mined by the military. But it is a strategic mineral. It is a good indicator mineral of other mineralization. Again, this is what you're looking for if you're looking for gold and silver, or vice versa. These minerals do occur in the same type of terrains generally, and they're a good associated mineral.
Mm-hmm.
Another good indication would be quartz, quartz rock. Quartz rock did cool at a much lower temperature than what the surrounding rock, as far as the schist or the granites or other types of structures you may have. And because of quartz being associated with about the same melting temperature as gold, that's why you generally find gold with quartz as an occurrence. And but this particular type of mineralization, again, associated with antimony, again, is a strategic mineral and not a precious metal, so it's treated a little differently.
All right, let's take another moment, and thanks to our sponsors. We'll be right back with Alaskan Gold Trails and more calls from our listeners.
Whether it's an auto, light truck, motorhome, or big rig, for the best service in town, it's Gabe's Truck and Auto Repair. And that's not just my opinion, folks. A couple of years ago, the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce gave Gabe's Truck and Auto their prestigious Raving About Fairbanks Award for providing the best vehicle service in Fairbanks. In addition to engine and general vehicle maintenance, Gabe's can also repair automatic transmissions, realign front ends, and repair mount and balance tires. New and rebuilt engines come with a 12-month or 12,000-mile warranty. And as many of you know, Gabe's is one of the first people that initiated the no-pass, no-pay policy on the IM inspection. That's right. If you don't pass, you don't pay at Gabe's. That's Gabe's Truck and Auto, located off Van Horn near Metro Field. Or you can give them a call at 456-6156. Their phone number, once again, at Gabe's Truck and Auto is 456-6156.
Hello, Harold. Hard day at the office?
Oh, I just want to sit in my den and... Marge, is that my den in the backyard?
All but the south wall, dear. That's on top of the car.
But what was my car doing in the den?
Oh, about 25 miles an hour.
I mean, how did our car get in the den?
Well, you turn right at the refrigerator, and it's right through the dining room.
At Baker & Associates Insurance, they know how a little incident can turn into a big expense. So make sure you're well protected. Call Baker & Associates Insurance, your independent agent. They're in the Yellow Pages.
Here's another good reason to shop at Fred Meyer today. What have you got? What have you got?
We've got everyday low prices on the things you need and use all the time, plus the time and money-saving convenience of one-stop shopping. Make Freddy's your winter one-stop.
Smart shoppers know we're the value store.
And you'll find extra value at Fred Meyer every day, in terrific sales just when you need them. Unadvertised specials, the best prices on your favorite brand names, and fast, friendly service that makes your trip worthwhile. When you're looking for the best value for your money, you'll find it at Freddy's.
One-stop shopping, that's our style. More choice and great buys down every aisle.
Fred Meyer's one-stop shopping, fast service, and great selection save you time. Our low prices save you money. Make Freddy's your winter one-stop.
You know there's always another good reason to shop at Fred Meyer today.
Back. This is Alaskan Gold Trails. Once again, my guests right here in the studio, Del Ackles and Rudy Vetter, and we're talking about mining and finding gold and antimony and alimony and palimony and all that stuff. And we've got callers holding on. That wife of an old miner. I'd like to thank you for getting us started. Found out something about a resource of Alaska that I had never even heard of. Let's go right to our phone calls. Hi, you're on Alaskan Gold Trails.
Hi, maybe your miner's wife ought to call back and let us know just what aspect of the antimony she's after, because we could talk about it all afternoon, maybe, or not.
Can you hear?
Talk about whatever point it was that she wanted to make. But technically, antimony is not a metal. It's what they call a metalloid. One of the uses for it that you did not mention is in casting, because in most liquids, when they solidify, contract. Water does not. Water expands when it solidifies, and so does antimony. And so antimony can be mixed with lead and tin and put out other metals in an alloy, which will not contract when you cast with it. And of course, that's a great advantage if the metal does not shrink from the mold. That's all.
All right. Thanks for your call. We're having some trouble with the phones. I hope that Tom is around. We're working on the levels. It's very hard to hear the caller. So when you call, I'll put you on the line, and I'm going to ask you to speak up very clearly and very loudly if you can. Let's take a moment here, put another caller on hold. We'll go right to this line and say hi. You're on Alaskan Gold Trails.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
Thank you.
I have a question here for you, gentlemen. I have in front of me a couple of clippings from the news miner in the last couple of years about a gold operation unit that's been devised by Lonnie McClung. And my question or request is, would you discuss the operation of that, what the principle and so forth, and what the status of it is?
Well, the current status of that operation, they're still building the apparatus. I don't know how successful it's been on a commercial basis, but the theory is a basic older theory of separation. It's called a lutriator, basically. And what I mean by a lutriator, it uses a water suspension method of separation. Otherwise, if you could visualize a glass tube, that would have your heavier sands in it with water passing from the bottom to the top, it would suspend or float this particular metal or this particular specific gravity material. And by adjusting that water, you can actually get the heavier metals to lag behind the lighter metals, and you can flush the lighter material out. The lutriator is very efficient. It is generally fairly sensitive to volume changes and water changes, and I have not really seen this particular operating under a commercial theory, but I would be more than happy to to have the opportunity to do that in the future.
And in other words, you don't know what the status of it is?
I don't know what the status is right now. He was advertising a lot of field trips and a lot of testing here last summer and promoting it. It does have some advantages. It does have a very, very fine gold recovery potential, and it does have a very low water use, which has both the aspects of picking up additional income from the norm and also of possibly alleviating some of the water quality problems they may have in the discharge.
Okay, thanks a lot. Appreciate your answer.
You bet.
Thanks for your phone call. Let's go right to one more caller here. The lines are all lighting up.
Welcome.
Right here. Hi, you're on Alaskan Gold Trails.
Yes, I would like to ask a question of either one of the gentlemen there. I understand that quite often quartz has gold spirated through it. Is that correct?
Yes, the quartz and a lot of the sulfide bases are associated because of temperature more than anything else. Quartz becomes a carrier just for the fact that it has about the same melted temperatures as some of the sulfide base minerals, including the precious metals.
Now, pieces of quartz that I have noticed around in some of these old mine tailings
mm-hmm.
have streaks through them of, I don't know, tannish, brownish colored
right.
Impurities.
Right.
Is that gold or is in part, is it gold?
Well, the best way to find out would be take a piece of that rock and have it assayed. Otherwise, you could find out, if it has free gold by taking a small piece of it and crushing it up into a very fine powder. You can take a regular gold pan and pan that out.
Yes.
And then retain the heavy metals that are off of it. You give you an idea. Most likely, what's associated with that quartz is generally an iron group metal, such as iron pyrite. It could be iron itself, rust. It could be ilmenite. It could be. It could also be in your... sulfide or oxide or the sulfide groups as far as pyrites, which are all indicators and carriers of gold. But anytime you find a piece of quartz rock that does carry mineralization, no matter what it is, and the red staining is a good indication of your iron groups, which is also associated with your gold groups, it's a good target. You may not be able to see gold. Actually, even large pieces of gold in this rock would not be visible until the rock was cut and polished. That's another way of looking at it.
I see. Well, thank you very much.
You bet.
Thank you for your call. We've got the lines lit up now, gentlemen. Let's take a moment. I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll go right to this line. Hi, you're on Alaskan Gold Trails.
Yes, ma'am. I called about the antimony.
Yes.
And I heard him ask to call back. And this is something that concerns me deeply. These chichacos that come up here, they don't know how to pour acid. When they're checking gold, you don't pour. That should be explained because it can blow up in your face.
Well, that's one good thing about the mining extension.
I, you know, I've seen men do this, and a lot of eyes get ruined and that. And also another thing I would like for these men to explain, that antimony is also a war material that makes bullets. And years ago, they tried to hijack a bunch of antimony in barrels out, and they got caught. And my husband, he's passed away, was not involved, but he found out about it. They stockpiled it and tried to get it out. At that time, it was worth 30 cents a pound. And that is a war material that makes bullets also. And the public that does not know gold mining should not mess around with those kind of things. I'm very interested because I know a great deal about this, and I'm listening because there's so many people out there that come up here and they think, well, we can pour a bottle of acid into water or vice versa, and we'll find out. And they don't know how to do a test pan.
Well, that's one good thing about the mining extension. It does afford that ability, and it also...
Just a moment. I'm going to hang up. I want to... But I think the public should know, unless they know what they're doing with gold mining and what kind of minerals they're picking up. If they don't know what they're doing, save the concentrates and take them up to the university and find out what they're picking up, because that university will tell you. And now I thank you. I want to hear what they're saying.
All right. Thank you for your comment.
And I'll call Hector tonight.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, number one, she should call Rudy and... Yes. Number two, there is a danger in using acids and stuff, but that's not your normal. That's not your normal prospector, your normal individual. Somebody that gets into acids for identification. Actually, what Rudy has been using in the past in his geochem type of studies that he's been doing would be something that could be very easily used by the layman without any danger of acid or anything else. There's not too many miners that they're involved with testing with acids. Mostly that's left to the labs, and you can use it for field identifications if you know what you're doing. But that's that's another good example of why the mining extension program could be used. They do teach that also. But maybe Rudy could explain how his geochem does work by using actually blaze or white gas and other types of accelerators that you can mix with it. You can actually make identifications of various base metals, which are good indications for gold. Go ahead, Rudy.
Yes. Well, this geochemical method that was developed after the Russian method by Leo Mark Anthony and Professor McCurdy some 25 years ago, I guess it was, the first time I seen it, the first time it was introduced. It is what's used, you use diphazone dye, which is a green dye, gasoline, and you mix the two, and dye, you then get a green dye color, you put that into a normal small size test tube of about 20 milliliters, and if you're testing for soil conditions or rock conditions, you add that to your dye, and after it's been mixed in the test tube and shake it for 1 minute, you have a colorimetric or a color change, which in the case of lead, it will be red. Copper runs from apple green to orange, and zinc will run to purple. Those are the three cold tests that you can use in the field.
This would be a very good indicator, or a very good thing to use for that one caller called in that was discussing that piece of rock he had found.
That's
it had
right.
The stains in it. That's a very, very quick test that he can do in the field himself, not alone crushing and panning it out.
It will not detect gold. There are other methods, hot methods and lab methods, that will detect gold. This will detect gold down to one part per billion.
Right, and it does give you a good indication of the carrier minerals. And there's one thing you got to kind of mention on that, Rudy, is the type of gas they do use is a blaze. Though it doesn't have any additives or lead base in it. If you did use that type of gasoline, it would give you erroneous readings. But it is a good field, a good simple math method. It is safe to use, and for the layman, again, it gives you a good indication right off the bat what you have.
All right, gentlemen, we've been talking about the University Alaska Mining Extension. Why don't you tell us, how can we get a hold of them? Right now, we've got just a few seconds left in the program. Where do I call, and how do I get started? I want to get some gold.
Well, you can call the Mining Extension at the University of Alaska and get a hold of Jim Madonna, or either through this program, of the two. I don't have the number. Maybe you would have it there in front of you.
No, I don't have it in front of me. As a matter of fact, Jim took the phone number with him. That's a good excuse. We'll blame it on Jim. He's out of town. We're going to take a moment and hear from some more of our sponsors. Next hour, we have Mr. Ron Hauenstein. We're going to be talking about, I don't know what we're going to be talking about, perhaps taxes, money, investments. Who knows? Let's get into it. This is Lori Backus, and this has been Alaskan Gold Trails. Thank you, Del Ackles and Rudy Vetter. It's been very interesting, and I think we're all ready to go out and mine some gold.
Well, thank you, Laurie. It was nice being here.
Good luck to you. All right, stay tuned. This is Alaskan Gold Trails. Next hour, we're going to be Talkback.
Effective March 1st.